Empress Josephine of France, wife of Napoleon Bonaparte, at one stage faced the guillotine before her famous tumultuous marriage. From her home on the Coromandel Peninsula, Stephanie Parkin has written a novel about this woman who survived seemingly certain death to face an uncertain future with Bonaparte, who was desperate for an heir. Josephine, who was forced to change her name of Rose by her controlling husband, went on to create a garden filled with plants and animals from around the world. Stephanie reads from Josephine's garden.
From the first moment she spied this crumbling mansion in its wild English garden, Rose knew she must have it. The house called to her. It needed love and nurturing and had withered from neglect. For more than a decade she has given her whole heart to this house and garden. It has brought her joy and comfort her in sorrow. Over the years she has made Malmaison one of the most celebrated gardens in Europe. She brought the wonders of the world to France and gave her visitors excitement and marvels. Her gardeners germinated seeds that even the Jardin des Plantes could not, and she commissioned artists to illustrate volumes of her flora and share her successes. I have done that. Not Bonaparte, she thinks. This garden is her legacy, yet he could take it from her so easily, so heartlessly.
Stephanie, what got you interested in Josephine stroke Rose's story?
Well, my first novel, Into the World, had these two people on an expedition, a gardener and a botanist, that came to the Pacific gathering seeds and plants from around the places that they travelled to. And I wanted to know what happened to them next. And then I found that the gardener becomes the chief gardener for Josephine, and that the botanist gets sent off on one of Napoleon's missions to bring back the spoils of one of his wars. So I thought, oh, well, this is a fabulous chance to explore this next phase of France after the Revolution. The French Revolution was what my first novel was set through. And this is what happens in the wake of the Reign of Terror and things like that.
Well, again, you take the woman's perspective, so we really get to know those men through their wives, long-suffering, particularly long-suffering,
yes.
Certainly in the case of one who's desperate for a child and he won't propagate.
No,
in that way.
He won't. No, I thought that would be a really interesting angle to come at, to see, well, what is that like for someone who really wants something in their life? They define themselves by being that thing and they just can't get in. What do you do personally with your longings? And I didn't just come to that from nowhere. I've read his journals and I get the sense that he is very self-absorbed and totally focused on his work. So I couldn't imagine him wanting children. But I also read this thing that a historian had said, and they sort of said it is tempting to imagine that Martha, that's his wife, if she had been able to give him a child, that he would have been a more softened character. And I just thought, there's nothing in his journal that gave me that impression. And I thought, how dare you blame this woman? So I thought, well, I'll see if it's him that doesn't want to have the child and see what happens.
We should name him, really.
Yep, Jacques Labladiere.
And with the other of the gardeners, again, we get to know him through Anne, his wife. Now, he is certainly fertile. And
yes.
So is she.
She comes from a large family and she really wants a big family. Both of them want really big family, happy family. But then poor Anne has a terrible traumatic stillbirth. And then after that, she's actually frightened to have a child. So I was looking at this sort of life and death situation that pregnancy and childbirth was for women then. And how does that work when you really want a big family, but now you're suffering from the terror and the shock of it? Yeah.
Now, I know the listeners will be wondering where Empress Josephine comes in, but she is absolutely central to this. And the two women and their husbands whose lives we've just been discussing intersect with hers in part of her life where she is wanting to create the most extraordinary garden.
That's right. She is obsessed with these rare and exotic plants that are coming from all the corners of the world at that time with the French expeditions and also English sea captains. She's writing to them around the world, all the travellers, and she's gathering all these seeds that she wants to grow in this amazing garden. She has emus and wallabies and zebras, orangutan, as well as trying to grow these amazing plants, because it was like seeing the wonders of the world for the first time. She was never going to travel to see them, and she wanted to bring them back for all the people that wouldn't be able to go on these ships to see the world.
Now, this was competition for Martha's husband, wasn't it?
That's
right. He was not happy.
No, a real botanical rivalry set up, because he is part of the Jardin des Plantes, so that's the official scientific august growing society, and they want the seeds that come from the Baudin expedition, particularly that Napoleon has sent around to Australia and the Pacific. Yeah, so that sets up a very strong conflict between them, because she also really wants these plants to be growing in her garden, and she's building these amazing glasshouses in order to be able to do that as well. So she's quite a power force in getting these plants to grow in France for the first time.
And she is married to Emperor Bonaparte, which
yes.
is helpful.
Yes.
Quest, just, isn't it?
Yeah, yep. She's had a remarkable life. So she has come from the colonies. She was born in Martinique and was sent to Paris at age 15 to marry a man that she didn't know. And he despises her and he ends up putting her in a convent. Then she finds herself in the prison during the Reign of Terror and escapes the guillotine and meets Napoleon after that time, when France is coming out of the darkness, coming into the opulence and into the light of that freedom after the revolution. And that's when she meets Napoleon, and that's when the story of their tumultuous marriage, I guess, comes out from that point.
What did you make of their, I was going to say, love affair?
Yeah.
For brief moments it was, but for an awful lot of the time it was not.
No, that's right. And that's what I came to the conclusion. The only thing I'd heard of them was that it was a great tragic love story, that, you know, they really loved each other, but they had to part because she couldn't give him a child. And then when I looked at it, it was actually a lot more complex than that, because he's absolutely infatuated with her to begin with, but the power dynamics change through the relationship, and so does her sense of identity. And that was what I was also really interested in looking at, is how she changes through the course of the marriage and how she loses some of herself. She falls in love with another man and has a public affair, and then she finds herself falling in love with her husband at a time when he's sort of falling apart from her. So it has a lot of complexity to it.
He was incredibly controlling. I didn't realise that her name was in fact Rose.
Yes, that's right. And that was the other thing. It's like all these little things that we look at today and think, oh, this is like a, you know, possible abuse type situation, where he's changing her name, he's micromanaging everything she does, he separates her from her friends, you know. It's very, very controlling, as you say. Yeah, so I wanted to have her on a journey where she can claim back some of her independence and spirit as well.
Outside of those letters, was there much information about her? This has been the challenge for a lot of writers trying to tell history from the female perspective, that there's a lot about the kings and when they're queens, but not necessarily, you know, when they are queens who are partners of kings. You know, the women are so often invisible.
That's right. And her letters to him weren't kept. She kept his letters to her. So you can read all of those from his side and get a real sense of how he was micromanaging her life and the change of how he felt about her over time as well. Her letters weren't really published. There was a group of them to the man that she had the affair with that were only found in the last 30 or 40 years, I think. I'm not positive on that. And the rest of it is other people's writings about them and their, so all the secretaries and ladies-in-waiting and all these memoirs came out after the fall of their reign. And it also wasn't very popular to like Bonaparte at that time. So often the historians are saying you have to take this and that with a grain of salt, because maybe they were making them sound worse than they were, or yeah. So it is tricky to figure out what's, it is other people's opinion of someone. So what really is truth and in that setting.
You start, so no spoiler alerts required here, with the time after the marriage has fallen apart. Bonaparte wants to take a young, potentially fertile wife,
yeah,
a divorce, and Biff Josephine, in fact, I think it's not the divorce that worries her at all. He wants to evict her from Malmaison, where she has spent so much of her life and her love in this garden. And that feels to her like the cruelest blow of all. She says, this garden is my legacy.
That's right, yeah. I really wanted to get that sense of what would that be like, that you couldn't give your husband a child and now you're going to lose everything, your home, your security. And not only that, she has put so much of her life into growing these plants and building this beautiful garden, and she's going to lose it and have to be sent away just because he's chucking her out for someone younger. So I thought, I really want to explore that, how that worked for her.
Given that Rose, as she was then, had been in a deeply unhappy marriage herself, and this marriage to Bonaparte was very difficult for her, it's very moving, I thought, the part of the book where she agrees to marry off her daughter to a Bonaparte relation. And she knows there's something wrong, but she doesn't listen to her daughter, and this estrangement happens. That was very sad to me.
I know. It's one of those things where I really don't know how I feel about Josephine during that phase too, because it was such an awful thing to do to her daughter in a way. I know she had been coming from the perspective of you have to make a good match for your daughter, and she wanted to keep her close. And I think that's what would have come down to it. She couldn't let go of things very easily, and she didn't want to let go of her daughter. But this husband, Louis, brother of Bonaparte, is very cruel to Hortense, some of which she wouldn't have known at the time, but it comes out much later in Hortense's own memoirs of the time. And he was supposed to be syphilitic, and he was just very abusive to her. So it was a lot worse, perhaps, than Josephine even realised at the time. But that's a very tragic part of the story through that.
So you felt conflicted during the writing of this. She's not a hero, a heroine, really. I mean, she's strong, but she makes bad decisions on her own behalf and on other behalfs. And you have, there are moments where she's just incredibly foolish, given everything that she's survived.
Yes. She's certainly a flawed character, I would say. You know, she's not, you can't come out wholly on the side of you, because some of the decisions she makes and some, she's comfortable with lying, I would say. She's, but she has to do these things to survive as well. And I do think that security was very important to her. And that was something I wanted to bring out with the connection to the home and garden as well, is that she has lost homes. When she first grew up, she lost a home in a hurricane, and then she lost a home when she was put into a convent. And so it was very important to her to get Malmaison and keep Malmaison. And, so she was definitely going to do what she could to stay where she was. And part of that, showing that background of her, was so you could understand her a little bit more about why she does these things.
Stephanie Parkin, her novel's called Josephine's Garden, and it's published by Allen and Unwin.